I do think it's important for us, and again, to the point about, you know, working on a project to completion, even if it's not complete even, I think the everything is about relationship. So something that you create, it exists, and maybe you'll find meaning out of just the fact that you had the opportunity to get something out of making it. But I think the things that we really feel so connected to what we've done, I mean, it's important for it to be shared. And it's not about it being like sent out to the masses and everybody saw it. It's more like, were there a few dear people in your closest circle that you felt like it would be meaningful for them to see you in this other way that you've now packaged and represented? It's what you were saying, yeah, the acknowledgement. And or any way that you decide to share something.
Kia ora, 大家好. Greetings, everybody. Welcome back to The Wilderness Within. On this episode, I got to sit down with the one and only Allison Noel Segala, who I consider not only as a dear friend, but also a little sister from a different mother. Even though this recording was made back in 2023, it's still so relevant today as we explore themes of identity and creativity and finding motivation. It was recorded under the beautiful night sky, and Allison and I got to turn the wheel of time back to her childhood and my own and explore the intersectionalities that we have, the unique upbringing and the cultural similarities and what we share being Asian American in California and having met in Nepal and going through the beautiful work of Conscious Impact there and to coming back to Turtle Island, North America, and exploring what it's like to be fellow creatives and balancing work, creativity, and self-care. So, as always, I hope you get value out of this, and I look forward to hearing from you from the other side.
Live fire, hot tea.
We got chia.
Clear sky.
Could not set the stage better. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Here, let's cheers with your sage.
Oh, yes.
And your tea.
And my tea.
That's how we roll. Thank you for making time. I really mean it.
Thank you. Thank you for making the trip all the way up here. This is such a treat. I feel like we live such busy, isolated lives, like having friends come visit and just gift us with their presence and their personality.
Mm-hmm. You saying I'm a personality? I guess I am.
Oh, yeah. And I feel like the part of the times when you do come to visit that make them so special is you make the time worth it. Like, you can come in these really short bursts and then it leaves, like, a huge impact during the time that you are here. And
yeah. It's because I bring the grapefruits, huh?
It's because of the grapefruits.
All right. We're here. We're greeted by this really, really lovely fire. And there are gazillions of stars above us.
So many.
Around this beautiful land. As a starting point in welcoming myself here once more.
Yeah.
And in telling the people who get to listen to this special conversation, would you like to tell us where we are and how did we get here?
How did we get here?
Yeah. I think I love to hear a quick and not so dirty summary of how we met, how did life bring you here, and then we'll go down the stream of conversation, the flow.
All right.
Let's roll.
Sounds good. We're here in what is now known as Anderson Valley in Mendocino County in a small town called Boonville. So the ancestral homeland of the Pomo people. Used to be called Long Valley before it was colonized. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is some of the most beautiful acres of oak woodland savanna that you can find, I think, in Northern California. We're surrounded by elders, by black oaks and live oaks.
And some of them are quite old.
Hundreds of years old, yeah. I mean, they say that oak trees grow for 100 years and die for 100 years. Unfortunately and sadly, many of these trees are, they're elders. They're on their way out. And due to a lot of bad management of land, there aren't a lot of new succession of trees growing to replace them. But I think when I think about this place and how much it's meant to me in the short time that I've lived here, that's kind of I look out of my window and think about most of what this land has seen over the millennia that it has been here, millennia, millions of years that it's been here, and how it sustains itself even with all these changes. And I'm blessed to live here because my partner, John, works here. It's now, this is the retreat center. It's a 650-acre property, and they host transformative retreats here. And kind of a revolving door of lots of different characters and people, mostly from, you know, the Bay Area and the city. And yeah, that's the land that we're on, and just wanting to really acknowledge how much it's held me and it's holding us now in this, in this moment. And yeah, if we're going back, it's like I'm here in Boonville because I spent 5 years of my life working and living in Nepal, which is where we met.
That's right. This is a good, this is a good, this is a good little segue. I know that the Bay Area, the greater Bay Area, which we're, I guess we're a part of, is your home. It's where you were born and grew up in.
I was actually born in Texas.
Oh, I forget about that.
I was born in Nassau Bay, Texas, and moved to the Bay Area when I was 3 years old.
You see, folks, I have known Allison for years, and I always forget this fact.
It's such a funny little tidbit about, and I've never, that's not true. I've flown through Texas, but I've never been back to the town where I was born, and that's something on my list to do sometime soon. But yeah, yeah, you know, born in Texas, but I would say bred in the Bay, like a kind of Bay girl through and through in a lot of ways.
Thank you for the acknowledgement of this land. It's really beautiful. Yeah. I have been very fortunate to have visited you and John several times. I lost count. And every time it's quite short, but as you've just said before we hit the record button, it's been memorable.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. And this particular time is, in my opinion, extra special because I come here for one night again. So I do.
Make it count.
Yeah, but this is so intentional because not only am I here to visit you and John and to enjoy the black oaks and live oaks and the rolling hills, which are now lush green from the incredible precipitation we've had in the region, we're here doing this this recording that we've talked about, that I've envisioned and thought about for over 2 years. Yeah. And so a long time in the making, very thankful we're doing this. You mentioned, you know, we talked about the Bay Area and the hilarious reminder that you were born in Texas. But take us back a little further. If you would, about your biological family and the culture and upbringing which you've had growing up in your immediate family, and, you know, what kind of traditions, what kind of roots do they hold, do you all hold? And because I think I love to really paint a clear picture, especially for those of us who are second or third or even first generation immigrants from a part of the world. And the subtle, fun nuances that comes with
complexities.
The ogre-like layers of just having that dynamic. You know, that's something that we've always bonded over. So I'd love for you to get into it real quick.
Yeah, I do. I do feel like, you know, especially when we met and in sometimes spaces where we've been, that was always this connecting thread, being, you know, Asian American kids that grew up in California, and you in SoCal, and your whole, like, how you grew up being really into cars, which is like a total like part of my life.
Don't tell my audience.
I think that adds so much great context to you in a way that, hey, I was rolling with those crews once once upon a time.
Yeah, but, yeah, truly.
No, that's a, I love that question. And yeah, I am the daughter of two Filipino immigrants who moved from the Philippines in the 80s. It's crazy. My parents had a really interesting journey that I think a lot of people's parents who are also part of the Filipino diaspora that is known as brain drain, which is actually a term used for a lot of diasporas from developing countries where you have a lot of white collar professional workers, teachers, scientists, doctors that leave where they're from to find a better life, yeah, or
that they consider may have more opportunities.
Exactly. And that was one of the beautiful parallels I found really enriching about my time in Nepal, and that I think I could have felt if it was any maybe country I'd been in, but there was this really strong connection in that, yeah, that parallel experience happening. But yeah, my mother went to, I always get it wrong, I think it was Minnesota or Missouri, and yeah, out there in the Midwest, and my dad followed suit shortly after, and they settled in Texas for a while after they got married, where both me and my older sister were born, and then moved to San Jose. My father had his brothers that had settled there, and so wanted to be closer to family, and it was a real blessing. Like, I got to grow up with a lot of my cousins who are all close to me in age, and we grew up having sleepovers and going to each other's birthdays, and I mean, to this day, we're still very tight. I'm going down there in 2 weeks for one of my cousins. Me and him are the same age. He's only 9 days older than me, and he's about to have a baby. Which is crazy, very special. And I think that really, that experience growing up in an immigrant neighborhood in the east side of San Jose with predominantly Chinese, Vietnamese, Mexican families, that really, for me, shaped, was a really formative experience of how I grew up. And it wasn't until I traveled and went to other parts of the world that were much more homogenous, you know, that I realized how special it was that I grew up in an elementary school where, honestly, there weren't a lot of white kids. It was always a running joke in high school that there weren't very many white people at our school. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were there, of course.
And yeah, but they were well below 50%.
Well below. Yeah.
Which is something that we quite quickly connected on and laughed about.
You know, because then we went on and spent more time in what were pretty much more white dominant spaces.
Yeah.
And then it was an interesting turning of the tides, I guess.
Yeah.
You don't spaces.
When it's part of your upbringing and it's part of your school life, it's your after school kind of activities, you know, sports or, you know, whatever activities you get into, you just think that that's the normal.
Yeah.
You don't think much of it until you step out of it or you see another version maybe on television or you go to a different region of the world and you're like, oh yeah, my reality is a little different from here or, oh, also there.
Yeah. And that's the irony too, because I am, as much as I feel like I wish I wasn't, I am a very like media tuned in person and I loved TV and movies growing up. And to this day, I'm kind of obsessed with the art of storytelling. And that's something I get really fixated on with anything I consume. And it was like the reality of my lived experience was going to my friends' houses. Yes. And, you know, all of my friends' parents either didn't speak English or spoke a different language at home and ate different foods or everyone had a different religion. And that was just so normal. And then on TV, especially in the 90s and the early 2000s, it was all, you know, white or American culture,
right,
whatever that exactly is. And
yes,
obviously, we were just talking about it, that's changing so much now.
Yes.
And, you know, we're not as tokenized. And there's these attempts and successes of capturing, you know, authentic cultural identity experiences in the mainstream.
Yeah.
Even then I grapple, and we can talk about that more too. Yeah, I grapple so much with the idea of identity and how it becomes part, it can't be extricated from how we move through the world, how we express ourselves. And I think because we grew up in a white dominant culture, I am always insecure about how much I myself am fixated on my identity and what I am projecting out into the world about that. But it's like, for somebody who grew up with that being just a huge part of my self-understanding, yeah, it's something that I return to again and again. And regardless of what, I think a lot of times for artists, you can't control the thing that you're that you're obsessed with. And that's the thing that it comes back to. And to me, it's really interesting also reading art or watching art made by, you know, brown kids who grew up in the Midwest, mm-hmm. or they were adopted, mm-hmm. and there's this universality to the experience that they had in that body, even though what happened around them was different than what I experienced. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I went on a whole other tangent.
That's great. You got on a little roll. And so much of it, because these are things that we've talked about, but the flow in which you told it just opened up a plethora of potential topics we can now open doors into.
For sure.
And you just reminded me so much of my upbringing here when I immigrated to the U.S., as well as like flashbacks of conversations that we've had in Nepal and in the U.S. and, you know, wherever we've linked up. And it just is like kind of warm feeling that's more than just a fire in front of us. But like, you know, deep within going like, yo, Allison gets it. We vibe. It's just very heartwarming is what I'm trying to say. It's so good. You spoke into the unique identity. And like, I think that's partially why a lot of us who maybe are born and raised in California or have spent significant time in this state often say we're from California.
Yeah.
We don't say we're from the U.S.
Yeah.
Because there is a uniqueness to a lot of the state. I couldn't say all of the state.
Yeah.
But the metropolitan urban areas of this particular state are, on the whole, quite diverse.
Absolutely.
And just wanted to echo what you're sharing. I grew up, when I came to the U.S., with a lot of Asian Americans as well. And just like you, when I went over to their houses, it was like Indonesian was spoken, Tagalog was spoken, right? Hindi or some dialect from India was spoken that I didn't know about, right? I'm just like, oh, they're speaking Indian. Little ignorant me did I know.
Hundreds of languages.
Yeah, but that continued exposure throughout my youth and into my preteen and teenage years set me up for this, I think, foundation that is invaluable. Mm-hmm. I don't think our parents chose this primarily because there's cultural ethnic diversity.
No, I don't think so.
But because, for example, your dad had a sibling or cousin here. My dad has a sister in LA. So they chose it based on that, right? Yeah. And they're like, oh, there's really good Asian food.
Yeah.
Like, sold.
Isn't that so funny that it wasn't necessarily, and maybe in the back of people's minds, it's an urban center, there'll be good colleges. Of course, right. That's what is in the back of their mind. Yeah. But mostly it's that the tribalistic desire to be with your own people.
Yeah.
And to have that kind of familiarity. Uh-huh. And you even have these enclaves of other, you know, like there's a huge Hmong population in the Midwest, I believe in
what?
Minnesota,
or
I might have that wrong, but you'll find these like small, pockets of immigrant communities it's like, oh, they went there, like I'll go there too.
They'll find each other. I learned when I went through Montana, there's a Tibetan community there. So of course, it's cold, it's mountainous.
Yeah.
There are spaces to build and it's, for example, relatively affordable. Something I wanted to add was, you don't think of it. You're just like, oh, if my parents choose it, I'll come along.
You know?
And for your case, you're probably you were so young when you moved from Texas.
Yeah, I don't remember.
There wasn't really a choice.
My first memory is in California.
Correct.
Like I have no memories of being in Texas.
Yeah. So. And growing up with this, even though you're born in this country, you have this dual identity because your customs and the gastronomy at home and so many other aspects at home, because, for example, your parents were teaching you Tagalog, your parents were exposing you to Filipino cuisine that you won't have at school cafeteria.
For sure.
So you still have this dual identity.
Yeah.
One that was at home and one that was like the Allison at school.
Yeah.
You know? And you're looking at and listening to, you know, you said you had an affinity to media and that aspect of like culture streaming through our consciousness.
Yeah.
So it's like we live these at least dual identities that sometimes are in harmony, but oftentimes there is points of like this, it's hard to, it's points of friction.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe what I want to ask, and I wanted to hear what you were going to share as well, is like, maybe tell me what you're going to share. Tell us what you're going to share. And then also maybe speak into a moment of like where there was a conflict or there was like a challenge in part of that upbringing.
I was going to say, that's a great question. The interesting thing about feeling like I had a dual identity growing up, it's a little bit different for somebody who's Filipino American because, well, one, my parents, I mean, it's not that maybe they wouldn't have wanted me to, but I grew up speaking English and hearing Tagalog and I never learned Tagalog. Like, I understand it a little bit and I know a lot of words, but there's a way that, and this is something I've been grappling with for a long time. I write about it a lot privately. And in the time that I've gone back and forth from the Philippines now four times since I've been 20, since I turned 25, it's like there's a way that because of, you know, the Philippines was occupied by the U.S. for 48 years after the Spanish-American War. You know, we were, the Philippines was a barter, was just something that Spain traded with the U.S. after the end of that war. And yeah, there's just so much westernization that's happened, specifically also because my family is quite, you know, they're from Luzon, they're from like the mainland of Manila, or not the mainland of Manila, but my mom's from Manila and my dad's from right outside of it. So compared to maybe Filipinos who are from different islands or other areas. I mean, like, not as huge or diverse or gigantic as India, but like many countries in the world, the Philippines is not a monolith. You know, each island, each area is so different. But particularly regionally where my parents are from, I think that influenced kind of how I am now. And I see that maybe when I interact with friends whose families are from Cebu or Pampanga or up north from, you know, their Ilocano or anyway, I'm going on a Philippines cultural tangent, which is a whole other little geography. Or more just like lots. Again, it's the onion. It's like
there's so many
layers that you can peel
there
back.
Really are.
And that's the same in it for any culture or country. But I do feel like in that way, giving that context, growing up, because I grew up in a very diverse and immigrant-heavy community, I didn't necessarily feel at that time that there was this dual identity so much as there was a dual reality of what the rest of my life or the world around me was like. You know, it was... I always knew I wanted to be a writer, which is just almost embarrassing to say out loud because it's something I still struggle with. I struggle with that process or that desire to move towards this dream I have, and I think any creative person who has something that they are aspiring towards, it is the work of their life and it's a love-hate thing.
Yeah.
And one of the things I grappled with most at that age when I was really young and knew that that was what I wanted.
Do you remember around what maybe grade or age that was?
Oh my gosh, I was in the first grade, I believe, when I wrote that down. Like I wrote it down, like this is what I want to be when I grow up.
If I do the math correctly, it's like
seven years old, or something.
Right? Yeah.
And my teacher in the first grade and my parents, bless their hearts, I knew they didn't mean it in a bad way. They were just looking out for me. Both of them were like, oh, maybe that will be more of a hobby. and you'll like have a real job. Classic, and that was like really discouraging, like, when I was that young.
Maybe we'll see.
Like, oh, like, you don't want to do that. And of course, it's like for parents, it's the worry about, you know, financial stability and what kind of life they'll have. Yeah. But that's, again, the life of any artist or any person who's living a non-conventional life that you're making do in a different way.
And how they move their entire livelihoods to the U.S. and their education and profession, all of that.
And was the sacrifice worth it for you to do that?
Well, has shown them and told them, and because also like societal conditioning and, you know, media that they have consumed consciously and subliminally, points to the reality that most writers, artists, and, you know, kind of like off the beaten path career choices don't necessarily, quote, make it.
Yeah.
And so in their love
aren't
language
successful.
And narrower definition of success, it doesn't fit that mold. So they're like, oh, honey, that's cute.
Yeah, of course. And that, you know, I went through iterations. Mm-hmm. I think at one point after that, I said I was going to be a politician, which I got so many weird reactions to that when I was young, realizing. And then it was, you know, fast forward many years later, I understood why.
Uh-huh. Were you in speech and debate?
I did do a lot of speech contests. Uh-huh. I didn't do speech and debate. Uh-huh. I don't think I had the option to when I was in high school. Well, I did student government in college, and I've had a lot of friends make weird comparisons to me being like Leslie Knope from, you know, Parks and Rec. Or those are funny little observations that people have made. But I do think since that time in my life, I've become a lot more internal, and I am still a very social person at times, but I don't really like to be as public facing as I used to be.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other, you know, thing of relating to that's just actually, how we change.
That's actually such a good...
You said the segue yourself.
Oh, I did.
Because I do think that this is a really clear transformation that I've witnessed. Mm-hmm. Even without you telling me, mm-hmm. but because we've had multiple, well, sometimes up to months of living and working together, we've talked about it. You know, you've shared some insights and developments in your life in that front. Because when I met you, it was actually through social media.
Yeah,
and it was the
when I was doing my fundraiser.
Yeah, it was the really, how would I describe it? A very articulate, vibrant, and memorable, like, showcase of who you are, what you stand for, and why this is important. I was like, oh man, like, I'm attracted to that, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a romantic attraction, mm-hmm. but it was like, I was attracted to like confidence mm-hmm. and clarity and devotion, right? And the fact that you are putting yourself out there to be like, here's what I'm going to support, like, will mm-hmm. you join, you know, like mm-hmm, it was mm-hmm. just such a showcase of the selfless self mm-hmm. and the service component. I was like, oh, I'm going to the same project, like,
yeah,
I'm going to meet this person likely.
Yeah, I mean, for me it's so funny, I uh-huh. it's beautiful hearing you describe it that way, and I think in a lot of ways I have so much love and affection for uh-huh. that version of myself at that age, and correct. Just the youthful optimism that I embodied so strongly. And then there's a lot of ways, like, to hear you describe it as like the selfless self, it to me is a bit ironic, because uh-huh. especially after this last time I was just in Nepal, yeah. like so much of the time that has now passed between now and then, yes. I see so much more how my desire to have that experience, to be in that place, to contribute in this way was self-serving. Like, it was for me, and it was this deep desire to be worthwhile and to feel like I had value by creating this channel within which I could imbue meaning into my life. And there's this way that I think that is an important experience that I don't devalue, yes. but it is something that I see differently. Like, I would never like tell people like, oh yeah, when I was 24, I went and did this amazing thing out of the goodness of my heart. Like, no, oh my God, like, I did that for myself. And if anything, I owe Nepal, and I owe everyone I met there, and I owe like every person I met in Tacare, like, I owe them much more than they will ever owe me. They don't owe me anything.
Yeah. This is on record, Allison.
Oh yeah, no, they know.
It's so good.
I was just there, and I felt like I told everyone that. So
this is the this is a very similar insight and sentiment that I've come to in recent years as well. And you know, you were there just about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And I haven't stepped foot on that beautiful land since the pandemic. In 2020, last time was early July.
Oh yeah, were there a little longer.
A little longer. But it doesn't change the fact that it's coming up to 3 years. Mm-hmm. And so much has changed in literally the world, mm-hmm. and as well as both our individual worlds. We've had extended period of time to really reflect on that. And one of the, I wouldn't necessarily say conclusions, because I think it's ever evolving.
Yeah.
But one of the clearer insights that I've come across is really there was this like sweet innocence and a desire to help, but there's also this underlying like I want to be acknowledged.
Yeah,
there's an ego side to it, uh-huh. you know. And I Absolutely. Think because we were younger. Mm-hmm. This is coming up to 8 years now, you know, at the end of this year. Yeah, truly, right?
Yeah, it blows
it's,
my mind.
It's something to ponder about a little longer. And mm-hmm. I think I'm still extracting and taking more lessons mm-hmm. and realizations from the first time in Nepal, in all the times in Nepal that we've had, and like, why did we do what we do? Mm-hmm. Not how and what, but like,
why?
Can we dig a little deeper? Can we find, you know? But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, I think I'm going to take a more humble approach, which is what I'm hearing you say. And mm-hmm. there's deep resonance there, for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah, I love that you say that.
There's a way that exact same thread of kind of what led me to doing that work in Nepal mm-hmm. and going back there so often, which again was, you know, I found the most amazing community of people in my life that are some of the people I'm closest to. Mm-hmm. And that connection runs incredibly deep. But I think removed from that, and again, going back to that whole idea of the desire to, you know, be a part of something that I felt like I could be proud of, that I could stand in front of, that I could find meaning in myself within, is kind of what led me to where I am now and doing the work that I'm doing now and continuing to work in nonprofit. But it is a tricky, it's tricky, I think, continuing to do any kind of work where you're trying to contribute to something and then you're also trying to foster an individualized self and put energy into something that's very isolated and intimate, like a creative work.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. And one of the things that I struggled with mm-hmm. even during my time in Nepal was the idea of, you know, giving so much of myself away to the point that it was not serving me anymore.
Yeah.
And how do you find that balance between like setting aside what you need for yourself and then giving yourself to something that is bigger than you? And at the same time, acknowledging the barrier, the boundary around sometimes you're giving too much, but not really for a good enough reason. Mm. Like this thing, this other thing doesn't need that much of you.
Right.
You know.
But maybe we fabricate
reasons to give ourselves self-importance.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're putting it in the wrong place because you're afraid of doing the scarier thing. And that you could apply, I mean, I apply that to my experience maybe working in nonprofit or working in, you know, spaces where I was doing quote unquote service work, mm-hmm. If for lack of a better term in this moment, but I'm thinking of any person who works at a job, you know, and maybe you're really motivated or you're good at it. But at the same time, you feel called to do something else and it's something that's scarier or it's more internal or it's something that you kind of have to stand out on your own and figure out how to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you avoid that because it's the scarier thing.
Yeah.
And I think this is, you know, I almost feel like I'm too old to be having this conversation, which is silly because I'm not that old. But I think that that's a perpetual conflict for many, many people of how do you balance, you know, first of all, if you're somebody who needs to work, having a livelihood, or you're somebody who is passionate about your job, but you're also passionate about something else.
Yeah.
I'm going to put more wood on this fire while I let you germinate on that or ruminate on that.
Not yeah, yeah. The SCOBY is going.
This is fun.
This is great.
I just like, this is, you're really giving me something right now. I've been needing this.
This is so cozy.
It is. Oh my God. And the stars are getting brighter.
Yeah. I've had quite unique, I mean, just it's the nature of my friends. The only recording that we did, no, that's not true. But still, it's brought me so many places. Yeah. I really think that in many ways, no matter how I cut it, I'm doing my dream job. I've created it.
I love that. I think about that when I like see what you're up to and when I read your newsletters. And like I definitely think about that when I think about you. Like you're somebody who has really steadfast, like stuck to their own path and not been necessarily so swayed by external forces that were pressuring you to do this or that. I feel like that's something that I really admire because I've struggled with that my whole life. Like I've struggled with feeling like, oh, I need to be a part of something else to give me, to define me, because there's security in that. And at the same time, like I do feel like I'm a very expressive person. I went through that phase from most of my 20s where I was really publicly sharing like creative work, which I'm so like, let me just say, like, I'm so embarrassed about that now in
Are
a way.
You?
Yeah, I don't. And there's a way that I would never take it back and I don't regret it. But the work that it's like, and that's a good thing, right? That I look back at things I maybe wrote and was proud of, you know, 2 or 3 years ago even, and I feel like, oh my goodness, I hate that and don't like it at all and find it, you know.
That's a strong word, Missy.
I know it. I know.
I'd say that to my nephew too. So.
I can't help but feel like, and I think that's not a bad thing. I wish I could work on being softer on myself, but I think I don't want to be too soft. I need to stay motivated.
Can you be soft but still stay motivated?
I could, but I don't think I've earned that yet.
Ooh, what does it take? Are you worthwhile of being good to yourself and soft to yourself?
I think that sometimes for people, and I don't want to sound too self-serious either, because I think people who take themselves too seriously are annoying, but I do think that it's just about putting in the work. And even if I create bullshit, like even if the outcome is shit, I talk about this a lot with one of my dear, dear friends who is also, she's an actor. And we talk about working on creative projects all the time. Mm-hmm. And I always tell her, we're always encouraging each other. Yeah. And I actually, with many of my friends who are creatives also, just make anything. Like, even if you think it's shit, like, just make something.
At least make it.
At least make it.
The action and intentionality of carving time, because let's face it, none of us have time if we think of it that way.
Yeah.
If we make time, carve time to create something that's original,
yes,
that's out of the purity and creativity from our heart,
exactly,
from our mind, that's what matters.
That's all. And yeah, you said it. Because I think ultimately when you make things that you're trying to please other people or you're trying to make something because the ultimate intention behind it is that you want people, you're thinking too much about the audience. I think at the end of the day, any kind of thing that you make that's going to be out in the world, mm-hmm, you do have to think about how it will land. Mm-hmm. And I think it just depends on where you're at in your life, in your creative process, yeah, where you decide how much that matters. But I also think that if there's not a deep, if it doesn't initially come from a place, if it's just you're making it for you,
yeah,
then it's not going to be worth anything.
Unless it's a collaboration.
And I love collaborating. Yeah. I wish I did it more, but I live in the middle of nowhere. Very
You're like,
far
I need
from
people
me.
To collaborate
Is there anybody
with.
Anybody here? There are people, but we're also all really busy. That's like the really funny, ironic thing about living in this area is there are so many amazing artists and creative people that live you know, in this part of California, but everyone's really far away from each other and everyone's really busy because everyone's hustling to kind of make living out here work.
Yeah. And that's a can of worms that we may not dive into tonight.
Oh no, we don't have to do that today.
You know, when I was younger, I used to kind of roll my eyes and not at all understand, and of course skip through the credits and acknowledgments when movies and TV shows or podcasts and the host talks about like, oh, we got to thank this person and this person. It just goes on and on and on. I never really understood it. And I think in the last few years alone, I've really come around and realized even the smaller projects like this require a whole team. They really require a whole community around it. And so I'm here to proudly acknowledge the humans since the launch of my Patreon in 2018 who have been contributing and or contributed in the past, acknowledged all that they've done. The time they've given to give me comments and dropping messages, giving me advice, and of course, dropping in their hard-earned dollars or whatever currency they're earning in to support me and all the projects that I've devoted my time to, including the Wilderness Within podcast. Thank you so much, you all. Really means a lot for your support, past, present, future. You make my dreams come true. You allow me to trust that each month I'm gonna have this nice little baseline of income that really sustains me and allows me to go, hey, like I can commit to this project. I'm gonna buy that piece of gear. I'm gonna hire that person. I'm gonna invest in myself, in the services and goods that allow me to create and try new things and experiment. And all of this is a part of it. So grateful for your support.
A shout out is also in order through my brothers, Carlos Militante and Scott Hansen, for the beautiful soundtrack we get to enjoy here, and everyone who likes, subscribes, comments, reshares on social media and through my newsletter. If you're in a position to help support this project, please head over to patreon.com/subtledream to consider being a supporting patron. Thank you so much. Back to the episode.
I wanted to take us back on creative work and mm-hmm. just creation, because as we mentioned earlier, one of the things that drew my attention before we met in person was that outwardness and mm-hmm. like how you put yourself out there. And I'm fully acknowledging, especially because you just told all of us for the last 10 minutes that's less you now, and you're not going to retract that. And so you have evolved and changed your methodology, right? Mm-hmm. And your approach towards that. But it hasn't changed you in the sense that you still have this creative energy that springs up, and you have taken that, and how it's taken shape in your life has changed. And I've mm-hmm. really enjoyed watching from the person that I knew you were, which was writing really well and speaking poetry and mm-hmm. words and expression mm-hmm. in which I found you, if I had to put you under an umbrella. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the years that have gone by, you've found a lot of different outlets, and you've been, as you've alluded to, more private about it. Mm-hmm. I want to ask, I guess at this point, whatever you that comes to mind, whatever you want to share, like, how has that come into play, and how has that been a source of fulfillment for mm-hmm. you? Because ultimately we create out of a desire to make something beautiful, to make something that's a reflection of us. And we make art and we're happy with it because ultimately we see ourselves in it. Oof. It's a version of ourselves, right?
Yeah. It's like giving, trying to give birth.
And, you know, whether we share it with others or not, of course, is up to us. So yeah, I'd love for you to talk more about your creative process mm-hmm. of late. How has that taken form, and how has that brought you fulfillment and satisfaction, joy?
Yeah, that's a great question. It makes me think a little bit about what we were talking about a little earlier of the different ways that we can engage with the world around us that brings us fulfillment or illuminates some aspect of, you know, how we can live. And I think in the past 3 years, since coming back from Nepal during COVID and settling here, I've gone through all of these different cycles of what I found, what I gravitated towards. Like that, I am such a funny, like I am a routine person in some ways, but I find that over the course of like a month, then over like half a year to a year, I go through this, different cycle. I think is very much in tune with the seasons. And I guess one of what I mean to allude to is, you know, living here and having our own home, and we were able to start a garden. And for me, ultimately, a lot of my creative process in the past 3 years has grown from what it has been like to have a relationship with land and with plants and with my garden, and to be able to return to those spaces and see how it changes, see how it feel, how it changes me. And it's not that I wasn't able to have that kind of relationship in Nepal, but at camp, it was much more of a collective stewardship of where we were. And this was in that way that it was just me and one other person there became a lot more intimate. Yes. So I really dived into just gardening a lot and getting into my natural dyes, which again, you know, growing indigo and marigolds and amaranth. And in general, I've always been a very crafty person and I enjoy working with my hands. Mm-hmm. And
getting them dirty. In this case, inky.
Inky. Well, what really I think the interest in natural dyes sparked this really deep fascination with textiles, whether that was, you know, yarn and spinning wool, which I haven't learned how to do, but becoming fascinated with the process.
The scaffolding, this loom.
I have a lot of looms in my house. Yeah, I got really interested in weaving and. I used to sew when I was little. My mom, that was something that I think was a really beautiful experience for me was, you know, when I was young, my mom taught me how to sew before she moved to the Philippines. She gifted me her sewing machine that I used to use when I was young. And so I started sewing a lot of my own clothes and dyeing them with plants that I grew. And I think the chemical, chemist, science-y side of me really loves that process. Yeah. And I struggled at times because the irony, and I think a lot of other people, I'd like to think a lot of other people can relate to this, but I might be just saying that to console myself, is that I was always thinking about writing when I would
do these other things.
Yeah, yeah. But those things fulfilled me in a way that, and actually were just times, there were a lot of times, especially when I was gardening, that I didn't think about anything. Like I was such a meditative flow state of like, I'm just, you know, doing what I'm doing, especially if it was planting seeds or I was tilling the ground, or actually hashtag no till. Greg, you don't want me to say I was tilling.
Greg, but, this one's for you.
That one's for you. But I think I just found a lot of deep fulfillment in taking care of things and seeing how those things grow and
the entire process.
Being
able to be here, this land.
Every day. You see it every day.
Throughout the seasons. Mm-hmm. And there are pretty drastic seasonal shifts.
Absolutely.
Here,
oh my gosh. It's right? Like.
It's beautiful.
It's like being on a different planet sometimes if you come here during different times of the year, you know? And I think, specifically there's seeing the same plants come back every year and learning and becoming familiar with the cadence and the exact, like, humidity of the air and the way the temperature finally maybe crosses over into, like, from the 40s to the 50s in the morning. But I do think that that also changes year to year. Like, climate change is so real. Yeah. And there's so much about even in this time that I've been here. And I've been in and out of Boonville for way more than the past 3 years.
Yes.
I've been in and out of here since 2017, but I feel like in that time I've seen a lot of things about this place change.
You're speaking so much more into art and creative process. I really like that. Because it's like, it's such a holistic now, like, perspective of mm-hmm. more than just about creating art. Because, mm-hmm. well, your art form has taken shape such that it involves the earth mm-hmm. and the cyclical nature mm-hmm. of seasons and water and nutrients and nurture and care, mm-hmm. right? It's intrinsic now. You must be, like, one has to become in tune for you to grow the plants that give you the colors and the texture mm-hmm. to give you the results that you desire. And so in doing this process, in putting in the work, mm-hmm. you can't help but also learn from nature and to observe and be a student of the earth.
It's funny, I wouldn't have thought of any of it that way, but that's a really beautiful an eloquent way of describing it. Yeah. And I think there's a way also that I want to be transparent. Like when I was talking about cycles, uh-huh. I would say that this last summer, spring, mm-hmm. I was still kind of in that place of wanting to work a lot creatively with my crafts. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I don't think of myself as this very prolific creator in any way. Like, I think when I talk about I like to do this and this, people get this impression of I'm this super, monastic type of person who goes home every day. And I am not, I like veg out all the time. And I am a very hedonistic person. Like, I just sometimes always want to relax and do nothing. I really am a big fan of doing nothing.
This neutral negative self-talk. it's raising some flags here.
Okay.
I'm here to catch you.
That's fair. That's super fair. I appreciate that. No, but I guess what I mean to say is that I also, since this last season, warm season of being more in that mm-hmm. Making with my hands mode, I really am making these really strong strides of forcing myself to the best of my ability to sit down at a desk and write and not let anything else distract me from that end goal, even if I have been less successful as of late. I do think that I've been on this journey for many, many years of moving the needle a little bit that way.
That's what matters.
As much as I can.
That's what matters. Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing is sometimes vegging out and relaxing mm-hmm. is a form of self-care that mm-hmm. you know you need.
Mm. Mm-hmm. But kind of going back again to the thing I think a lot of people will relate to is it's really hard to, and this is maybe different for you a little bit, but when you're working a full-time job 40 hours a week, I think more people often than not, and I'm always so impressed and obviously I don't know if inspired is the right word. I think I find it awe-inspiring that there are so many people who work the grind of needing to support themselves and then also can turn around and put all they can into whatever passion or creative work they're working on. And I mean, also there are people who do that and they are raising families and have a lot of responsibilities. I guess I wanted to acknowledge the way that I said that, it sounded like that is only pertaining to people who work and have families. But if you're somebody who is full-time raising a family, first of all, that's real work. Yeah. And there are so many things in our world right now, even if you took away the trappings of industrialized society and it was just the things about, needing to take care of the people around us and the land that we live on. Dealing with the way the world is constantly kind of bearing down on us, mm-hmm. it is any wonder that at the end of the day, we have the energy to give to ourselves and to try to make something beautiful.
It is still a choice for those of us that have the basic needs met mm-hmm. and maybe have risen above it to have the opportunity, and some would call it also privilege, to have the free time, the leisure hours, to then choose how to occupy it.
Absolutely.
Correct, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I do think I want to speak into that a bit, because I think that is what you're alluding to. Mm-hmm. I would say in recent years, I've become more aware of this incredible privilege that you and I have had for a number of years as an adult, as we come into adulthood, that we, because of the place that we are residents and citizens of, first and foremost, and we've had the good education and a network that really supports and work that allows us to be in certain places and speak the languages that really allow us to get ahead, you know, for lack of a better term right now, to now have the complicated irony of choosing how to spend what little time we do have at the end of the day, when we don't have to worry about a leaking roof or a warm bed or food at the table, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I think, coming back to realizing that, but not dwelling on the fact that, oh, I feel so like privileged and like I feel bad, you know, like I shouldn't feel bad. But it's really about the gratitude.
Absolutely.
That we have parents and ancestors and friends and a network that has supported us, that we also have chosen to take certain hard decisions and have put in devotion and time into consciously and maybe a little bit unconsciously creating this reality for ourselves to arrive in this particular point. I wanted to re-ask the question, and I wanted you to speak a bit more into, you know, you mentioned the single tasking that you're able to get into when you're in the garden, right? Full presence and the state of like meditative state, right? The presence, the finally, you don't have to worry about time and task and, you know, alarms and other response. You're just like, I'm here, I'm weeding, I'm here, I'm mulching, you know, whatever it is. And you said that you've able to do that with your garden, and when you're, you know, playing with the indigo and all the lovely texture.
Sewing is like that.
Also, right? I wanted you to talk a bit more into the sensation, the feeling that you have when in these moments where you do make time, where it's just you and what's in front of you, you and the fabric you're holding, you and the natural dyes that you're mixing and being a wizard. Like, how does that feel? And like, why do you keep doing it?
I mean, I think it's the reason any person loves something that activates them. It makes you really present. I think that we live in a world where we spend a lot of time, well, essentially disassociating, like looking at our phones, watching TV, you know, driving and listening, though at least you're present in that you're paying attention when you're driving.
to self-preserve, which is why I love, and not crash.
Exactly, which is why I love going on drives, actually. But yeah, like when you're sewing, when I'm dying, especially when I'm like, I think natural dying I particularly love because it's taught me so much patience and so much letting go, because oftentimes it's experimental. I mean, if you're the kind of person who's doing it because you want to sell it, but you have to sell it commercially, or you're selling it at markets, you know, it has to be of a certain quality. I just do it for fun. And it always looks different, and the colors can always be impacted by how hard your water is, or what, you know, state the plants were in, or once you harvested it. And then with indigo, it's like extremely variable all the time. And that's really the beauty of it. And it teaches you that letting go. Right. And I think sewing too can be really frustrating. So, and so can natural dyeing, and so can writing, like all of these different things. I think a person who's really into like mountain climbing or, you know, acroyoga, like all of these different quote unquote hobbies. I don't like the word hobbies, but that you can, I think passions.
Yes.
Part of why we love them is because we are here. Like when we're doing them, we are right here where we are and we're nowhere else.
Yeah.
and
we can get into that state more readily.
Exactly. And when and you have that moment when you're, you know, maybe you're putting yourself down for the day, or like, I'm done in the garden to the, for the day, and you walk away from it and you feel like maybe I'm a little tired or whatever the after consequence is, but you also, like, it releases, I think, those natural endorphins of feeling, oh, like, I did that. Mm-hmm. And it benefits you, and at least for me, and I think this is why I never got into working out. Like, a lot of power to people who love exercising, but I feel like I need to see what, if I spend a lot of time doing something, yeah. I like need to see, have something yeah. that I can touch and hold for after that time is done, which is why I loved moving and making bricks.
Right, right. Because each brick is a tangible result of like, oh, yeah. we did this,
like I made this. And so
it's like in a video game, you go, ding. You got a point.
Yeah. Exactly. And then, you know, for me, like after I finish sewing something, it's like I will wear it, like I will obsessively wear it and then just like look at myself wearing it.
You do have some beautiful pieces that I've admired quite a lot. And yeah, it's fun when you kind of model it yourself.
Yeah.
You know, because you just, it is a sense of, I mean, you haven't said it, but I'm reading between the lines here, and I've talked to you, so I have an unfair head start. But no, there is this unfair. Like sense of proudness that you want to share, like, hey, like, this is my original work. This is my time, my dedication. This is a result of weeks, if not months, of experimenting and months of waiting for a plant to be ready for me to harvest and extract and maybe cook and have the right pH and the chemical reaction to arrive to this state.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's being there from seed to end. Seed to shirt.
Hey! Hashtag seed to shirt.
But even then, there's like also so many steps behind that when there were people, you know, cross-pollinating or hardening a certain plant to be able to grow well in this zone. And I mean, you can go, not that this is California. It's not a zone that's hard to grow.
There's a lot of zones in California.
But where we are specifically, it's not very hard to grow anything.
Right.
I think.
Right.
But, I was going to say something else and then I forgot.
We'll come back to it whenever it hits. But that was good. That was good. I think it speaks to, you know, the reason why I ask it is because we've talked about it. So in a way, I kind of know the answer. And B, I think your answer is unique, but it's also very universal. The entire process, no matter how we dissect it, you know, there's going to be some differences from person to person, but I think ultimately deeper down, if we're to dig within, it's like it's an outlet of expression. It's like a way for us, as you said it very clearly, like a way to come back to the presence and for worries and other things to melt away, especially in a very fast-paced information technology driven world where we want to disassociate, but maybe we want to disassociate in a way that has a more positive effect, you know, in a less negative connotation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, ultimately, I think anytime you're being present with yourself, it's like the complete opposite of disassociating, because rather than choosing to not be, I get what you mean. Like it's forgetting though. Mm. You're still trying. The process of being hyper-present when you're, like, this is what writing is like. Writing is ego death. Like, you are not, especially fiction, more so than when I'm maybe trying to write, like, a personal essay of some sort. But in both ways, when you're just kind of hyper-committed to the, you're not thinking about you. Like, you are dead. You don't exist. And all that matters is the aesthetic quality of the writing, like your aesthetic quality. And the difference there, when you're really intensely present with whatever it is you're doing or what's in front of you and not thinking about yourself, there's a certain, it's the nirvana, it's like that blissful forgetting. When we're overthinking, when we're so fixated on ourselves, whether that's our own insecurity, I think peel back the layers, it's just thinking about yourself, where you stand in relation to everything around you. And so I think we're always seeking that desire to forget a little bit. And I think in the good way, there's being with ourselves in the moment of engaging in something that we, that lights our soul on fire. And then there's the forgetting of what most of us do, or what I find that I do a lot. And I think I'm soft on myself too, and that's a natural thing, whether that's, yeah, distracting myself with different things. But I think that that's a really human experience right now.
It really is.
In the time that we live in.
No, I love that you don't glamorize it. I love that you don't make it seem like, oh yeah, like writer's block. I don't experience it.
Oh my gosh.
Right?
I think,
but it's because what we often see is the celebration of someone's work when they finally, quote unquote, make it.
Yeah.
But we often don't see the struggles and the face plants, the moments where we've given up.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe all the twists and turns that one had to go through in order to get to where people think that they've made it, so to speak, right? And this applies not just to art and creative process, but really it's a mirror and analogy for nearly everything that we throw ourselves to in life, mm-hmm. right? The insecurities and fears that have always been there with us will show up no matter what we devote our time and energy into. It shows up in friendships. It shows up in especially partnerships.
Yeah.
It shows up absolutely in family and even in hobbies, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and communities.
Because it is like everything that we create, especially if we choose to share it, is a statement of like, this is me. And this is like the entirety of me, like all of it, you know, the good, the bad, and the mm-hmm. ugly.
Even when it is just in that one snapshot moment of your life, and you can like put something out there and then feel like the next day it doesn't reflect you at all.
Yeah, because we are evolving selves, mm-hmm. you know, to think that what we created, and this is why I'm chuckling, but I'm wanting to remind you not be too hard on yourself. And I think you're there already. It's like you laugh at the fact that you threw yourself out there so much in your 20s, right? That you were so outwardly expressive and eager to share. It's like, yeah, that was you. Like you had to go through that stage to like expand and contract, so to speak. The cyclical nature.
Yeah. Very much.
But it doesn't change the fact that it's you and you've changed, and that 6-year-old, 7-year-old you in first grade who wrote, I'm going to be a writer, or I am a writer, mm-hmm. really was like the start of a lifelong like mantra.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would you agree to that?
I don't even know. I agree with that. I don't know if mantra is the right word so much as it's just a like fixation, like an obsession.
Oh, okay.
And I think that...
Could you unpack that a bit?
Well, I think as you were talking earlier, something I also want to say is that sometimes it's not good to want something too much. Mm. Like I do think that there is some benefit for folks in the world, whether... I'm a big consumer of media and I love different cultures and subcultures, like really, I don't know, like the history of skateboarding or like the culinary world. And I know I'm getting a little everything everywhere all at once.
Go down wormholes in Wikipedia.
Way. But exactly. I find that I love learning about all these different aspects of the world. Yeah. And I think something that I find interesting is there are people who find really great success in certain industries or certain niches, and not necessarily all of them like wanted it that badly, but they just came into it. And then there are also people who like that was absolutely what they wanted and they went for that one thing. But I also do believe that when we move through life, it is important to not just bulldoze towards this like singular idea of like what you think you're supposed to be, but to feel like, again, you're in relationship with the people and the things and the events happening in your life, that there are synchronicities, that you're going, you know, going with the flow, so to speak, that you're not forcing anything. And I do think that I am exactly where I am in my life right now because I wasn't forcing anything.
Yeah.
If anything, the one thing I'm forcing myself to do, I try to force myself to do, is right. But outside of that, it's the obsession, right? Outside of that, it's like how I ended up with a lot of, I mean, and a lot of that is also privilege, which I wanted to circle back to your comment about, like, it's a waste to guilt. As much as I struggle with, that's a huge thing I dissect about myself all the time, is my own relationship with shame and guilt. Mm. As a child of immigrant parents, as someone who feels like they're very resourced, but wants to, and as a resource person, feels obligated to like put my resources back into other things, but also feels selfish and wants to keep so much for myself. And it's never, you're never going to be not guilty and you're never going to not feel shame. But I think how we create our own relationship to who we are when we experience those things, or how we just relate to those things underlyingly as we move through life, is how, I don't know, you'll be able to get by or make something beautiful.
We got to ask, like, how much of that is self-inflicted, actually? At this point in our life, right? Because, like, we can blame and outwardly point if we're younger. But at this stage in our lives... Mm-hmm. We gotta take ownership of that.
Oh, for
right?
sure.
And of course, absolutely. Like, it's easier said than done. And I understand the complexity and layers, and like, you know, some of us have multiple years and not decades of unpacking to do.
Oh, don't we
and
all?
And reprogramming. But truly, it is like, it is still a choice.
Yeah, to self-inflict it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, yeah, I think that if you wallow for too long, you do yourself a disservice of doing something that's not just meaningful for yourself, or but for other people. And again, I don't know. I have so many different feelings about what it means to create anything and desire for how it will be received. But I think that if you spend too much time in that place, yeah, you're just shooting yourself in the foot, I guess.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
It's relatable. Yeah. It's relatable. I mean, allow me to speak personal example, because I want to own up to the fact that while I've recorded a number of conversations with dear friends like yourself, I haven't produced an episode yet. But, you know, at this moment, you know, like,
absolutely.
You know, on mid-March 2023, let it be known that even though I'm here, you know, doing it with you, which, as I said in the very beginning, I'm proud of, and I'm really happy we're doing it. And I'm very thankful that we're both carving time to do it.
Yeah.
There has been a part of me, okay, I use that verb tense very intentionally.
Yeah.
There also has been this part of me that has procrastinated, that has been
I'm with you, boo.
Fearful of, like, putting myself out there and going like, this is the show I've created.
This is what I've done.
You know, like,
this is what I spent all this time talking about.
Any comment that's put in that comment box, I might take very personally.
I love you. Right? I love you so much.
Right?
And it's absolutely. It's so vulnerable. And like recently, and I'm even nervous about this going out into the world. And I don't envy you in the sense that we've done video editing projects together. Like editing in general is so much work.
Yes.
And it's going to be a lot of work putting this together. But I know that you're going to do it, and I know you can do it.
Yes.
But I totally relate to that feeling. And this is something like in the artist way and all of these different, you know, books that are essentially artists trying to coach other artists to like, just do it. You'll be okay. Just do it.
We're like patting each other on the back.
We're just like,
and also
okay.
Like, I'm really afraid. So when they're like, just like hide in a corner and like not come out.
Yeah, exactly. And no, it's like you said earlier, like when you mentioned writer's block, or that I was saying I don't, and that's, you know, every person I admire has always said that writer's block is just fear. Because if you're not thinking, any kind of block is just fear. And I think 90% of why I struggle to sit down and like do the work at the end of the day or meet things and take it to the finish line is because I always get overly frustrated if it's not turning out how I want to. Mm-hmm. And I can't just let go of what I'm trying to make it be. Yeah. And I'm learning a lot more in very more recent times what it means to just like let something be what it's becoming, yeah, and not be attached to how it's going to end up. Oh, yeah. And then be willing to put in the work to like keep building on that thing if I choose to like keep like chipping. You're just always chipping away at something.
Yeah.
So many things. You really hit something that I feel very strongly about.
I felt called to take this moment to acknowledge it. One of the things I experienced recently when I was in Mexico earlier this year, it was right around Lunar New Year. For me, the Gregorian New Year, there wasn't really a big shift because besides like keep writing the wrong date for year, that first month, right?
Yeah.
You're like, it's not January 2022.
Yeah.
But something shifted for me around Lunar New Year, which was earlier this year. I went to this men's circle intensive.
Cool.
Which I was actually seeking very actively the week prior. The week or two prior. And the reason why I went to make a longer story short, is because I realized more and more in January and December too that there are some deep-seated issues of insecurity and ego and childhood shit that I haven't lifted the carpet where it's all swept under.
Yeah.
Right? And I've just been afraid. I'm like, nah, I cleaned the room. Yeah. I've vacuumed everything.
Everything I dusted.
But on the surface, right? I vacuumed on top of the carpet. I vacuumed around the carpet, right? I've swept it.
I
mopped it, you know? I put like pine sole on it.
Except
right?
Lift the carpet.
Right? Which makes me very attractive, it smells good, right? But if you were to lift that carpet, you're like, oh, you forgot some spots here.
There's a lot of stuff under your
neck. And it became really obvious because I'm relating with a partner. You know, we're traveling together, we're living together, we're solving problems.
To be fair, just in your defense, it's like you don't realize how much is under there. It takes a lot of time.
It does. I'm not giving myself a hard time. Yeah. I'm setting up the story because it's relevant to what we're discussing. Allow me to paint this story that's very personal, but is relevant, I promise. So, you know, it's called shadow work for a reason. It's under the carpet. It's fully in the shadow.
It's fully in the, right?
And I'm realizing like, oh, these patterns.
Patterns and.
This sounds resoundingly like the previous relationship. or that conflict I had with the friend that we're no longer talking with, you know? Mm-hmm. We can all relate to it.
Yeah.
And it's so easy, and a lot of us, myself included, are guilty of this. We blame the external factors.
Sure.
You're like, oh, their fault.
Yeah.
Obviously their fault. You know, I didn't do nothing wrong.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is.
But, it's hard not to.
But I think because thankfully I was in a space where there's a lot of people seeking the healing. There's a lot of people owning up to
their
stuff swept under the carpet. And I was like, oh, I'm finding other men, or at least male-identifying people who are willing to do this work in a circle where we're free and safe to yell and to scream and to cry and to share from the deepest parts of our being, to be like, yeah, I haven't been a perfect person. Mm-hmm. None of us have.
No one has.
And own up to it.
Yeah.
And I realize, oh my gosh, and it's incredible. Like, this is a shout out to like men's group and men's work and like whatever gender and like, but like deep work. Let's just call it deep work.
Yeah, yeah.
To be like, oh, ultimately, and we've talked about this throughout the last hour, ultimately, there is a lot of fear and insecurities holding us back. There's a lot of deep-seated fear and insecurities from I think a lot of sources and events that we have had very little control, no control,
for sure,
especially in our younger years.
Yeah.
That we've carried unintentionally. We mm-hmm. talk about baggage a lot, right? In relationships mm-hmm. and yeah. as an adult. And I really feel it and see it more and more recently.
Yeah.
And I bring this up because, you know, we're talking about ultimately the creative block is fear and insecurity. I'm yeah. like, yeah, I would go as far as saying zoom out a bit.
Yeah.
And like a lot of life.
All struggles and obstacles, yeah. especially in life and in relationships are based in yeah. are fear based.
And get this right, I also had enough free time in my extremely blessed life to then go to Vipassana mm-hmm. and sit and meditate mm-hmm. hours a day and see what is.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
being present.
Dang, this two-hit combo is hitting me in the gut. It's hitting
me
in the cajones, in the balls.
Oh my gosh.
And this is on record, I love it. amen, aho. Yeah. I want to own up to the fact that I procrastinate a lot in this new project.
So do I.
And I think it's a necessary mm-hmm. process.
I think it's part of it. And I think learning how to understand yourself through that process and tap into what you need to do to move something forward. It feels really, I think it never ends. Like, I think this, you know, you're never going to stop procrastinating, and neither will I. And I'm never going to, even after I make something I'm really proud of, I'm never going to stop being afraid that the next thing won't be something I'm really proud of. And honestly, most of the time, I'm still, like, I look back on like a really long time and can say, I would look back and say there's only a few things in my life that I'm really proud of that I made. But I don't think that's true or that's fair, because the person I was in that moment doing that thing, I am grateful that I got to have that. I'm grateful for anything I've ever done, honestly. But I think that I'm always going to feel differently about something after time has passed, or maybe even after I just like got it, I expelled it out of my body. It's like, okay, now it's there. And yeah. I think regardless of what becomes of it, the process, I think everybody says this, the process was the point.
Yes. It's like the mandalas that the Tibetan monks make, right?
Yeah.
With the little beads.
And then they get blown away.
They're just like, I'm just going to intricately, with a lot of detail, go dip, 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 one by one, right?
Though at the same time, I will say for writing, you know, Joan Didion said, you know, you're not writing if there's not a reader. Like, somebody does have to read it. And so I do think it's important for us, and again, to the point about, you know, working on a project to completion, even if it's not complete even, uh-huh. I think everything is about relationships. So something that you create, mm-hmm. it exists, and maybe you'll find meaning out of just the fact that you had the opportunity to get something out of making it. But I think the things that we really feel so connected to what we've done, I mean, it's important for it to be shared. And it's not about it being like sent out to the masses and everybody saw it. It's more like, were there a few dear people in your closest circle that you felt like it would be meaningful for them to see you in this other way that you've now packaged and represented? It's what you were saying, yeah, the acknowledgement. And or any way that you decide to share something. Yeah.
We all have a desire to various degrees, right? Depending on our personality, and some would argue star charts and
we all want to be seen.
But
everybody wants to be seen.
Any degree, just be like, be acknowledged, be seen, be understood, right? To be heard.
In maybe not known.
Yes. Some of us don't want to be in the spotlight, so to speak. But at least like in the circles of friends and family, those that you cherish or hold dear to your heart, at least that small immediate circle to feel all those things that we've just said, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think if we all cultivate this deeper understanding that is nearly a universal truth with almost all people, then wouldn't it be so much easier to relate with other humans? Wouldn't it be such a beautiful way to not arrive at anger and conflict.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And to actually find more ways to relate, mm-hmm. and to find more ways to support and uplift one another, mm-hmm. instead of being competitive, mm-hmm. and be belittling, mm-hmm. and needing to be like, I'm the better person. It's just like, that would just be so clownish.
Yeah.
You know, if we really embody that and know that deeply. Mm-hmm.
But I think that the difficulty with that is that it requires vulnerability. Mm. And unfortunately, I do think that it's not necessarily we live in a, like, culture completely devoid of that, because that's not true at all. But I think that, you know, we live in an increasingly divisive society just here in the U.S., and especially, like, everyone is traumatized by what we just went through. And again, we're being kind of forced to re-engage with, you know, society and working and...
Yeah, we weren't given a very long transition period, huh?
No, not at all. We didn't have time to grieve. We didn't have time to process. And we weren't, you know... Most people weren't taken care of. Like, we don't live in a society founded and based in care.
Nurture.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And then some folks have been hurt and in the slums, literally and figuratively, since before the world turned upside down in the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, and, absolutely.
And there's even more folks that have generational trauma that they have had no ability to come out of it. On their own, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there is...
I do think there's a lot working against us. I mean, and I think maybe every generation and in every era of existence, mm-hmm. has faced their own version of that.
And people write about it, apparently.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Somebody did. Well, and
I see a correlation.
We were able to see those parallels.
You know, and I would imagine that this is something that you've known too. As we're talking about oppression and transition and healing and, like, lack thereof, I do see a correlation of artists, writers, creators who do incredible, or even I would even argue their best work, coming out of a place of hardship, coming out of a place of great challenge and great obstacle, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe they've had, like, incredible odds stacked against them, or mm-hmm. or you know, whatever trauma even, mm-hmm. And I think it's because it's the balancing within us, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to swing so far into the hurt and is also this grand ability within our bodies, because they're capable of swinging the opposite spectrum of great healing and mm-hmm. thriving and immense, infinite creativity. I would want more of humankind to be able to step towards that, mm-hmm. whether it's sooner or later.
Not much of a later, but
yeah.
Not to be, I mean, I don't want to be.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is, and to bring it back into the context, the container of what we have here, you know, our parents and ancestors wouldn't have thought.
Mm. No, wouldn't have thought.
They wouldn't have thought that their descendants, their progeny, mm-hmm. would be sitting in front of a fire in what we call Mendocino County in California, yeah. under the stars, talking about them in a way.
Yeah.
And kind of like, hey, thank you. You know? Like,
even though it's not necessarily what they would have envisioned.
Yeah.
And I think that the same will probably be said of people two or three generations after us. And I think so much of the future reflects the past, and yet back then you could have predicted and you couldn't have predicted how things would turn out. But there's so much, yeah. I think even now in this time frame where people are starting to really mythologize or have a lot of nostalgia for the early 2000s and the 90s, as if that was so long ago. And I guess it was, because when we were growing up, people talked about the 80s and the 70s that way. And now those eras seem so long ago. And we weren't, you know, I wasn't alive for the 70s and the 80s. And I think that there's this, I don't know, I have a very strong fascination with time and how it reflects, yeah, how fast it kind of moves and also how it doesn't.
I was gonna ask, it feels right to make a request at the end, towards the end, if I may.
Yeah.
Is there a piece of poetry that's like, has a theme of time, creativity, and or things that we've discussed this evening that you could share with us?
Yes, I do have something that just, and you can cut, you can edit all around this.
Yeah. You're just giving me a little work.
Yeah.
Sorry. No apologies.
No,
I love to tease.
I know. What you were saying about, you know, our ancestors having no idea that this is where we would be.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, we're also making a lot of choices that are going to have reverberations like throughout. It was funny, right before we came down here, and I was like, hold on, I'm going to do something. I took a picture of something out of my notebook that I actually realized I wrote more than a year ago now, probably about exactly a year ago. And it was just something that came out of a prompt in a writing class that I took. And yeah, I come back to it a lot.
Good.
It means something for me. And
that's all I could ask for. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, goodness.
And people of all shapes, sizes, and genders, mm-hmm. I present you, Allison Segala.
Hi, you. Here where I am, the light is fuzzy, soft, like cotton candy. The flowers in a perpetual state of almost wilting, but not yet past their prime. That's a metaphor, probably, for how I've been feeling. Wondering where I have to walk to reach the edge of me. Past lives I used to love, wedged between the pages of old books, cherished like dead pressed flowers. I miss the blooming, the unfurling that happens when everything is still unknown. But what do I know anyway? I act as if the footprints I have left across this warming earth mean anything more than the fact that I was once one place and now I am not. I am here. But hey, you, let me just say, there once was someone I thought I had to be, and I'm not trying to be that anymore. Or at least, I think I'm finally starting to just be what I am, whatever that is. All twitchy limbs and cold toes and dry skin and overactive brain, the person I was when I was the size of a sack of flour, just waiting for someone to pick me up and rock me to sleep. Inside here, it is light and warm. There are lots of clouds, but only the good kind. And it rains, but just enough to not make you sad. And here, everyone you've ever loved is still here. They've been waiting, and no one's mad about the details you've forgotten. They just want to touch your face and tell you, wow, you have no idea how much I've missed you.
I see why you come back to it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My hope is that this lights someone's inner fire up in a way that they never thought was possible. Someone that's maybe an aspiring writer, poet, spoken word artist, someone that just is a budding creative, knowing that perfection is not a destination, but the courage to create and make a stand, formulate words, ideas, sculpture, whatever the medium is that's uniquely their voice and their vision is the most important and the most beautiful. In this time of seemingly greater changes and uncertainty, I think that inner peace and resilience and creativity
can be a harbor of, yeah, safety and resilience. I really value that. I get to have my tools and the time and the resources around me, the studio, to keep creating. And if anything, find more value as I get older and become more courageous to just be like, hey, this is it. Judge me or not, I'm declaring myself to the world. Yeah, I'd love to hear, of course, from all of you, any of you, as a comment, as a DM, as an email, as a voice message. I welcome them all and just so happy and proud to keep putting this out there. I still have so many conversations to go through, and one by one over the next few weeks, months, I'll keep getting to it. This is a really good time in the winter in the Southern Hemisphere for me to do this. So, until next time.